On today's episode, the Chiefs keep their playoff hopes alive and get the win against the Colts. And in comeback fashion, the Bears hold on to the NFC North lead, beating the Steelers. And thanks to that, the Ravens have now taken the lead in the AFC North. Sunday Night Football, Stafford pads his MVP case. And the Bucs, well, they're in trouble. And the Cowboys, 21-point comeback to get the win over the Eagles. After that, a recap of Monday Night Football in top three, bottom three. This is the Fumble Rooski Podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has three touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that six or seven spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome to the Fumble Rooski Podcast by Power 88 Dean Radio and Secret Weapon Consulting. We got CJ Medeiros, Justin Tucker, Adam Ray in the back. I'm Chris Kostich. Week 12, not officially in the books. Still got Monday Night Football later tonight. Panthers and Niners are, well, already happened from when you're listening, but we'll be recapping that later on in the show. But let's start with our Rooski game of the week, the Chiefs and the Colts. And the beginning of this game, it looked like the Colts had this in the bag, and all of those dome team allegations were going to go to waste, aka myself. I was getting ready to take that back, but the Chiefs down in this game, a huge second half, including a fourth quarter where they outscored Indianapolis 11 to nothing, and then got the win 23-20 in overtime. So the way that the standings look now in terms of the playoffs, because of it, Patriots, because of the Colts losing, officially currently are holding the top seed in the AFC. The Chiefs currently are in 10th in the AFC behind the Texans and the Steelers. The Bills currently holding the last playoff spot at 7-4. The Steelers, Texans, and Chiefs all at 6-5. But all those teams currently, the teams above the Chiefs right now, currently holding the tiebreaker in terms of win percentage in conference games, because the Chiefs are at 1-2, Steelers and Texans 2-1 and 3-1 respectively. Well, we knew that the Chiefs' playoff hopes or the playoff percentages were going to be slim to none if they lost this game. And we were talking last week as well in terms of how, you know, they if they lose that game against the Broncos, which they did, the chances of them winning the division are slim to none, never mind making the playoffs. In this case, they're keeping the hopes alive in the fact that they could get a wild card spot. And Patrick Mahomes doing what Patrick Mahomes does, of course. Anyways, thoughts from you fellas. We'll start with CJ.
Well, Chris, well, you were concerned about your take about Indy being a dome team falling down. For me, my take about Indy looks alive and well. You remember what I said about how to beat them? I literally said, sell out to stop the run every play. Sure, Daniel Jones could get some plays. He did have, two touchdown passes. But it became clear, especially later in the game, that Kansas City stopped Jonathan Taylor. You know, he's held 3.6 yards a carry, 58 yards on the ground on 16 carries. And because Kansas City, like, you could see every play they were stacking the box. And sure, Daniel Jones, he's not terrible, at least anymore. But Kansas City selling out to stop the run every play really hurt the Colts. So especially at the end of the game where you can see Kansas City mounting a comeback, right? And if, you know, and the Colts want to play keep away, you know, and just run Jonathan Taylor. No, stuffed again and again and again. And I said that was going to be the key. You have to make Daniel Jones beat you. Granted, he almost did, but it's clear he just didn't have enough to get it done. Especially in overtime, you know, every time they try to run with Jonathan Taylor, just there is nowhere for him to go. And so once again, I will say it. The key to stopping the Colts is make them beat you with Daniel Jones. Because when Jonathan Taylor has an off day, the Colts do not win. And we have seen it now thrice. And as for Kansas City, like you said, they did keep their playoff hopes alive. That's good. And it's funny, though, they dropped to 10th, actually, in the total AFC standings after winning that game. You know, because like you said, Pittsburgh, Houston, old tiebreakers. We'll see if that holds. Currently, as of last night, I think they have a 56% shot to make the playoffs. So it's still essentially a coin flip.
Tuck?
That was one weird game. Does anyone else feel that the Chiefs could have won this before overtime when they got the ball to the one and yet somehow stalled out on offense? No one else finds that weird? I thought that could have been the reason they could have lost that game. And when the Colts got the ball in overtime to start, I was like, well, here we go. Let's see what the Colts have. And they got it to 3rd and 1. I was like, okay, this should be easy to get. I wouldn't have done a straight, like, draw. I would have done a toss or something like that. But the Chiefs sold out to stop the run. They stopped the run, and now they got the ball back. I was like, the moment they got the ball back, I was like, this game is over. And I turned to something else because I have no faith in the Colts' defense once they've been on the field for that long against that player in Patrick Mahomes. So I knew after the end of regulation, they got the ball in overtime. I'm like, they're winning this game. Because the Colts did nothing on offense to score points. Once that happened, I was like, this game is over. They're going to win, and then they're going to move on. Patrick Mahomes didn't have his best game, but he did just enough to win them the game. Kareem Hunt actually outplayed Jonathan Taylor, had 80-something yards on the ground, like 84, 85, something like that.
Kareem Hunt had over 100 yards on 30 carries.
Really? I stopped listening at 80-something, but I was like, damn, Kareem Hunt is actually looking like his prime version of Kareem Hunt. And then that Kansas City defense, say what you want, when they need to get the ball back, they can actually get the ball back for their offense. Not surprising, not shocking. I knew that the Colts had the potential to lose this game, even though they really shouldn't lose this game. Congrats to Kansas City, and now it's time to move on to other teams.
Yeah, CJ, you mentioned it's basically a coin flip in terms of the Chiefs making the playoffs. Real quick on your Jonathan Taylor take as well. In the three games that the Colts have lost, including yesterday, so Taylor ran for 58 yards on 16 carries this past week, 14 carries for 45 yards, no touchdowns against the Steelers. And then the Rams, which was their first loss of the season, 17 carries, 76 yards, no touchdowns. So your key, keep them to under 80 yards, I guess. But to wrap it up in terms of the Chiefs, you mentioned what was the percentage there, CJ? 56%, 54%?
As of last night, I saw it on the NFL app for their playoff picture.
Okay. And as we mentioned, you know, you look at the teams that are above the Chiefs in the standings right now, and mentioned the Steelers and the Texans, the Bills, Jaguars, Chargers. The Chargers are falling apart. Jaguars don't know what team you get. They're 7-4 somehow. The Steelers, you're just expecting a collapse out of them. The Texans, they're hot with Davis Mills, but are they really going to make this big of a run with Davis Mills, or whenever CJ Stroud comes back with Stroud to pick it up? Or is Stroud going to pick up right where Davis Mills left off? So that's, I mean, if you're the Chiefs, it's not a terrible spot to be in. You're 6-5. You're a lot, like I said, playoff hopes are alive. Things are looking a little bit better than what they did at the end of last week against the Broncos. Anything else you guys want to touch on?
Nope.
All right. We'll step aside when you come back. Bears getting the win against the Steelers. Caleb Williams showing out again with a 3-touchdown performance. This is the Fumble Rooski Podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6th or 7th spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome back to the Fumble Rooski Podcast. Let's talk about the Bears. The Bears. 31-28 win against the Steelers. This is a bit of a weird one. I feel like that the Bears should have probably won this by a little bit more than what they ended up doing. But credit to Mason Rudolph and the Steelers, kept it a game for as long as possible. But we're going to keep it to the Bears for the moment. Caleb Williams, 19 for 35, 3 touchdowns, 239 yards. DJ Moore, been having a bit of a slow season, 2 touchdowns in this one. And Kyle Monongai, how about him? 12 carries, 48 yards, and a touchdown. He was the lead back in this one over DeAndre Swift. Bears are 8-3, top of the NFC North. And seeing the way that some of these other teams in the NFC North are playing right now, the Lions have kind of become a team where I don't know what to expect of the Lions at this point. They lose 16-9 against the Eagles. They get taken to OT by the Giants this week. The Packers, their offense is sluggish. Josh Jacobs is hurt. Their defense is still really good. But the Packers have become a team where Jordan Love, it's Toyotathon, and Jordan Love is nowhere to be found. I'm liking the Bears right now to take the NFC North. It's weird to say it right now, but the Bears taking the division is seemingly a lot more likely than one would think. Tuck, we'll start with you.
Yeah, it's looking more and more likely that the Bears, surprisingly, might take the NFC North away from the Lions, who we all thought would come out of the North as the prohibitive favorites. I thought the Bears were still in the second year of Caleb Williams, the first year of Ben Johnson. I thought it might take a while for them to progress and actually get to the point where they are now, but I've been pleasantly surprised. I didn't think they would be 8-3 after 12 weeks. Which is a credit to them. Their defense is solid. Their offense is better than it was last year. Caleb Williams, I think, is better than last year. All around, all they needed was a quality head coach in order to turn this thing around. They have the talent. I'm not totally convinced of all of their weapons yet. I think they just need one more quality, like a true number one receiver, because I'm not sure DJ Moore is that guy right now. And maybe a little more help in the run game. But outside of that, I think next year people are going to be more surprised about the Bears, because I think another year of experience under this offense for Caleb Williams, I think the skies could be the limit. But for this year, it's not totally unlikely based upon how the season is going for them to win the NFC North. I don't see them just outright winning it, because I still believe in Detroit, but it's not impossible, not totally impossible.
CJ?
So as of right now, the Bears, I mean, let's not beat around the bush. They've been really good. You know, they're taking the NFC, or at least the NFC North, by storm. They're third in the overall playoff picture. However, I think it's important to admit that the odds makers don't really believe in them, if you can believe it. They only, despite being the third seed in the NFC and leading the NFC North, they only have a 62% shot to make the playoffs. By the way, quick fix, Kansas City is actually at 54. The odds changed. I just looked. But this is per NFL.com. And the Packers are still favored over them at 78%. Even the Lions, even though right now they're out of the playoff picture, they're the eighth seed, they're at 76. So clearly not a lot of love for Chicago going on right there. And I want to point out, Chicago might be getting hot at the right time, because when they beat Pittsburgh, granted, I think they let Pittsburgh hang around a little longer than they should have. I think we all think that. But this was, I believe, their first victory against a team above 500 this season, or a team that's still above 500. So hats off to them. They finally got over that hump. That's huge. But now what we have to look at is what's the remaining schedule, right?
I have it up right now, if you don't already.
I know, I do. I have it up. So Friday, November 28th, they're going to the Link. They're playing Philly. Then they're going to the Tundra of Green Bay, Wisconsin. Then they're hosting the Browns. Then you're hosting Green Bay. Then you're going to San Fran, which I don't know what the hell to make of that team. Are they good? Are they not? They're injured, but sometimes they win. And then you're hosting Detroit. So you're running the gauntlet. Do I think they make the playoffs? I don't care if that 60-some-odd percent says. I think they do. But winning the NFC North, that's a different thing entirely.
Yeah, I think the problem you look at, especially with the Bears in this upcoming schedule, I think the issue that you look at is how they performed against the Lions earlier this year. And since then, they haven't played competition that you would probably deem up to the level that the Lions are at. And as you mentioned, now you're going up against five teams in the next 6 weeks that are going to be playoff contenders in the Packers, the Lions, twice against the Packers, I should say, the Lions and the Niners. The only credit that you, or the only gift you really have in the last 6 weeks is three of your last four games are at home. That's probably the biggest gift that you can get at that point. And you mentioned the Lions having a higher shot. Their path is a little bit easier. They do have the Packers again at home. Then they got the Cowboys on Thursday Night Football, Rams on the road, Steelers at home. And then last two games on the road, Vikings. And as we mentioned, the Bears. So it's a bit of an easier path. So I can see why the probability is a little bit more leaning to Detroit in that sense. But we've also seen Detroit not show up in some of these games recently. And as we mentioned already, only winning by just barely beating the Giants in OT this past weekend. anything else we want to touch on from this?
Not really, no.
All right. So we'll look at the other side of this for at least the AFC North. Talk about the Ravens. We'll just get right into it. Ravens getting their fifth straight win this week against the Jets. And a bit of a scary one if you're a guy named Justin Tucker, getting the win 23-17. But a win's a win. A win's a win, Tuck. And now the Ravens are at the top of the AFC North. And what a turnaround considering where you guys were at for through week six. You guys were dead in the water, injuries galore. Lamar comes back. Now here we are.
Mm-hmm. Here we are. First and foremost, I'm happy, but I'm not content. We're 6-5. We still have a long way to go before we can even say we're safe in the AFC North. But I will say this. The Steelers better prepare because they got the Bills coming up. We have Cincinnati coming up, and by no means is that going to be an easy game because, of course, they're going to play us tough while they give up 40-something points to everyone else. But they're going to play us tough. I expect that to be a hard-won game, but I still expect this to win because, again, I don't care if it's Joe Burrow or Joe Flacco. Joe Cool is losing. I don't care which one. So I think we'll get the job done because it's at the bank. Maybe it'll be more difficult if it's at Cincinnati, but since it's at the bank on Thanksgiving, I think that's going to be enough to give us the edge in this divisional rivalry. I think Lamar Jackson's going to be just fine. I don't think he'll be Lamar Jackson-like as he's been in the past because I'm not sure how healthy he is at this moment in time, but I think he'll do just enough to win the game. I do not think the Bengals can stop the rushing attack, even with the abysmal guard play I have. I think we'll do just enough to win the game. And as far as everything else is concerned in the AFC North, the Browns finally have competent quarterback play. Too little, too late. We don't see them again, so I'm happy. And the Steelers are the only real threat that we have in the AFC North. They have a tough schedule, but we see them twice anyway. So if we are able to either split or outright beat them and sweep them, I think we win the AFC North. But it really comes down to whether or not we can beat them. If we can beat them, yeah, we'll win the division. Everything else should be able to take care of themselves. But as of right now, I'm happy, but I'm not exactly confident that we can keep this lead until we actually face the Steelers. I need to see what I'm dealing with them.
Yeah, well, Tuck, I will say you might be on heart attack watch for the next 6 weeks. Considering that, you mentioned that you still have to play the Bengals and the Steelers twice. You also got to play the Patriots and you also have to play the Packers.
I'm not worried about the Packers.
Really? Really?
Not yet.
Moment.
I don't know what I'm getting with the Packers. That's why.
Okay.
It's Toyota-thon. How about that?
Well, this was what, the first week of Toyota-thon and Jordan Love didn't really perform?
And they won.
And they still won.
And they won. So, yeah, consider that, if you will. Consider it. Damn. All right, whatever. So, Chris, I guess it's me now.
Yes.
The Ravens, you know, congrats to you guys, you know, division leader to division leader. Yeah, you grab the four seed. That's cool. Look at the probabilities right now. The Ravens have an 80% shot to make the playoffs. That's as good as it's been all year. Nice job, man. Pittsburgh, with that loss, is officially out. You know, they're out. They're on the outside looking in. They're the eighth seed. And their odds went from like 50 to 28. So, yeah. And the rest of your division, you know, the Bengals are injured. And the Browns are the Browns. So they already may as well be eliminated. Both their odds are less than 1%. So overall, as for the game itself, the Jets are one of those sneaky, tough teams where, you know, obviously any given Sunday, but hey, a double-digit win against the Jets, who still play hard. You know, Aaron Glenn's going to motivate his guys regardless. So that's huge. You know, you can't sneeze at that. You know, first in the AFC North. And, you know, everybody's starting to come back. You know, Lamar didn't have the best game, but he did what he had to do. Got two touchdowns from King Henry.
Mm-hmm.
And I do have some Ravens news. Quarterback Joe Burrow is expected to play.
Why? That's what I wanted to talk about. Why?
I just literally got a notification from the NFL apps. Like, Joe Burrow, toe, expected to play Thanksgiving versus the Ravens. Because, you know what, Tuck, as for why, your guess is as good as mine. I already said, like, I think they should just shut him down for the year since they're already out of contention. But as for Lamar, I do expect you guys to win that game. And I can't really say a lot that hasn't been said already, other than kind of like we said about the Bears, you guys are going to be running the gauntlet at the end of the year. So I still think Pittsburgh's not going to catch you guys again. I think they're on a downward trajectory anyway. It's the Tomlin cycle. We all know that. Maybe they get in as the seventh seed. Maybe they don't. But yeah, I think for the most part, you guys are fine.
Can we talk – before we go, can we talk about something? Why – I don't know why it feels that way, but I know you guys are Patriots fans, so you felt like this once before. Why does it feel like it's only happening to the Ravens? Why is Joe Burrow starting against the Ravens?
Well, actually, it's very simple. He could have started this week against New England, but you can't rush him back on a short week. That I feel like if the Bengals weren't playing on Thanksgiving, we would have seen him on Sunday. That's why.
Tell him to sit his hobbled ass down.
He wants the money and he wants to earn it. So, like,
he is 3-8. Wouldn't. And if they lose, they're going to be 8-9 at best. There is – why even take the risk right now? Why even do that to yourself? They're 3-8. They have no chance of making the playoffs.
Are you familiar with the term bad teams stay bad? This. That's my answer.
Say the Bengals get the sweep on you. They also have the Bills and then the Dolphins, Cardinals, Browns. I mean, the chances of them running to the table are somewhat probable.
Unlikely.
They're actually very unlikely. Their odds are less than 1% to make the playoffs.
Yeah. The other thing, too, is that they've also lost 8 of their last 9. And to finish up on the Steelers, too, you know, like, Aaron Rodgers is hurt, but we were talking too, like, Mason Rudolph low-key kind of looked better than had the offense looking better than Aaron Rodgers. And DK Metcalf is dealing with, I believe, a calf injury or hamstring injury, one of the two. So there you go. All right. We'll take a quick break when we come back. Stafford and the Rams get the win against the Bucks, and boy, Bucks are in trouble. Another injury to their name. This is the One Brewski Podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6th or 7th spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome back to the Fumble Rooski Podcast. Let's get into the Sunday night matchup from this past weekend. The Rams and the Bucks, and this game was over by halftime. It was 31-7 at halftime, and credit to the Bucks, they only held the Rams to 3 points in the second half, but they didn't score any in the second half. Big story from this game, besides Stafford having another MVP performance, and looking at the odds at the moment, according to DraftKings, not a paid sponsor, Stafford currently leading still at +115. Drake May in second at +125. So that's where that stands. But I want to keep it to the Bucks here because, you know, obviously we were talking last week about how in trouble they were, how like they were in a bad spot. They had Chris Godwin back for this game, but like Chris Godwin has not been looking good out of his injury. Ekbuka, we're talking about this. All you got to do is double team him. They can't find Kate Otten. And now Baker Mayfield's hurt. And now Baker Mayfield is hurt. What was the official injury that they came out with? It was a
AC joint sprain.
AC joint sprain. That's going to sideline you for a couple weeks. That is for sure. That's in his left shoulder though. So not his throwing shoulder, which is good, but goodness, it's Baker's a tough motherfucker. That's for one thing. But we've also seen what a hurt Baker can do, and it's not many good things. Granted, when he was hurt on the Browns, it was actually his throwing shoulder. So that's a bit of a difference. They have the Cardinals this week, so that could potentially turn into a trap game. So we'll see how this, it was 100% his left shoulder though, Adam. His last play was the long Hail Mary that Todd Bowles made him throw. And when he came up, he was holding his left shoulder. The one on the Browns. Okay. Never mind. So you look at where the Bucks are, it's not good, especially with the Panthers clipping at their heels. They got the 49ers tonight, as we were talking about. And say the Panthers get the upset win against the Niners, we're looking at the Panthers at the top of the NFC South. Not great. CJ, your thoughts?
Yeah, there's a lot at stake here. And unfortunately, look, it's not news to anyone here. I think that Carolina caught the injury bug, but they just caught it at the worst possible time. This is about like the worst time to get hurt, you know, as teams are starting to get eliminated from playoff contention. Some teams have a significantly tougher schedule, you know, like you're gearing up for a playoff push and now you're hurt. You know, Evans out for the year. Godwin, I'm sorry. I don't think Godwin's healthy. He's playing injured. You still don't have Bucky Irving. Allegedly, he might be back next week. Baker's hurt. Like, if your QB goes down, only in rare scenarios are you still in good shape. I think Teddy Bridgewater's a passable quarterback. He didn't look all that good against the Rams, but you know, when you're thrust in almost immediately in the game, I mean, that's usually not a recipe for success,
especially when you consider the Rams are like one of the best teams in the league right now.
Yeah, exactly. But it's not just that, what you said about the Panthers, I want to expand on that. It's that the Bucs no longer control their own destiny. Like you said, Carolina wins. They're in, like, they lead the division. And Tampa, they don't just get knocked down to the 5, 6, or 7 seed. Oh, no. If Carolina wins tonight, which I do think an upset is possible, then I think then Tampa's out of the playoff picture. And honestly, if Baker's injury is really that bad, who knows if they get back in, because Carolina, you know, from one Southern Cat team to another, they're literally just the NFC equivalent of Jacksonville. So, essentially, you know, for Tampa, you still have an 83% shot to make the playoffs. I don't want to say like it's over, but you're getting hurt at the worst possible time. It seems like the wheels were already kind of wobbling, but now I think the wheels are falling off.
Tuck?
It just, whenever I think about the Bucks and I think about like their team, the thing that always kills them is like death. Like they always get injured. They don't have players healthy and they don't have people to replace them. Chris Godwin, just for one reason or another, always seems like he's injured. I'm glad they have Emeka Ogbuka, because quite frankly, they need it with both Chris Godwin and Mike Evans injured. Bucky Irvin is injured now. I don't know what's up with that offensive line, but it doesn't seem healthy right now either. Tristan Wirfs got bullied all game by Jared Verse. Baker Mayfield is now unhealthy. The one reliable guy that you had on offense when it came to health is now injured. And it's now, it just seems like if it's not one thing, it's another. And this happens year after year with the Bucks. Luckily, they always manage to get healthy enough to make the playoffs. But right now, I'm not sure if that's possible. I think eventually it could be possible, but right now it just seems unlikely due to everything that's going on. And the Panthers actually looking decent all around. So I think it's still a possibility they make the playoffs, but damn, will they be crawling into it unhealthy.
I think that they'll definitely get healthy once we get into the middle of December. I mean, Mike Evans is supposed to be back by Christmas time. And terms of his recovery timetable, but it's a matter of where you are at that point with 3 weeks left in the season. In looking at their upcoming schedule in terms of the Bucks, they have to face all of the their NFC South opponents at least one more time, the Saints, Falcons, and they still have to play the Panthers twice. We mentioned the Cardinals that they're playing this coming week, and they also have Miami week 17. So it's
winnable.
It's winnable, but you really got to slug it out up until Christmas.
They need Baker, though. Mm-hmm. They need Baker to pull this out.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to win with that. I'm like, no, like you're not winning without QB1, even with Teddy.
I think they could win with Teddy against the Saints.
Yeah, against the Saints. Can you not hear yourself there? The Saints.
They still have the Saints, and I think it's potential. It's a possibility against the Cardinals, because I'm not sure if Baker will be healthy enough to go.
I don't know. Jacoby Brissett's been playing well, but they also have no defense, so maybe we get a shootout. We can only hope.
All right. Cowboys-Eagles. I don't know how the hell the Cowboys are still alive. I don't know. Like, you know, you start with trading Micah Parsons before the season starts. The defense is terrible. And then you trade for Quinnen Williams, and everyone's just like, this is the year that you're going to – this is the year you're going to trade and say, hey, we're going all in this year. It doesn't make sense, but goodness gracious, the Cowboys are hunting for a playoff spot. Somehow, some way, and now they're 500. I don't get it. They're 5-5-1, and they come back down 21, beat the Eagles at home, and now they're what was the record? Now it's 22-2 at home against NFC East opponents. Something about Dak and the Cowboys when they play a division rival at home is something else, to say the least. And there was some times during this comeback where I was just like, how are they even in this game? Because they would have one bad mistake. I mean, granted, the whole first half, the whole first, we'll call it 25 minutes of the game, was just dog shit from the Cowboys. And the second half was a slow crawl into getting it into a tie game. And then, of course, Brandon Aubrey kicking the game-winning field goal to end it. But, you know, you had Dak throwing bad passes, threw an interception in the end zone at one point in the third or fourth quarter. I'm pretty sure it was the fourth quarter. On top of that, the play where the Cowboys punched out, got a fumble recovery on the punt return and got to the 1 yard line. They didn't even score in that drive and still ended up somehow winning the game. First of all, total collapse from the Eagles. But I think the bigger story here is the Cowboys. That's where we're at. Breaking news, though, on the Cowboys side. Tyler Guyton suffered a high ankle sprain, left tackle for the Cowboys. Expected to miss their Thanksgiving game against the Chiefs.
Ooh.
So that could be interesting. But real quick, in terms of the playoff picture, where the Cowboys stand, they're still a couple spots out. They're in 10th behind the Panthers, Lions, 49ers holding the last playoff spot. But with this win, it seems a little more doable. And for some reason, the defense is starting to make plays. I don't get it. We knew what the offense could do with George Pickens, CeeDee Lamb, Javonte Williams is playing out of his mind. But now we're in a spot where we're thinking, wow, the Cowboys can, they could make a run. They could actually make a run here. Tuck, we'll start with you.
I knew that they could make some noise based upon the trade and what they were going to do with Quinn Williams and Kenny Clark. I knew that, but I did not think they would come back down 21-0 against the Eagles and somehow pull off the miracle upset. I don't know how they did that. I need answers because I did not think they were good enough to win that game at certain points. For an example, CeeDee Lamb had a couple of drops. He's had 7 drops against the Eagles in 2 games. That is not good at all. And yet somehow the Cowboys were able to keep the Eagles scoreless in the second half, score 21 points, and then ultimately kick the game-deciding field goal to win it. I don't know how they're 5-5-1. I don't know how they still have a chance to make the playoffs. I don't know how they traded Micah Parsons away at the beginning, before the beginning of the season, and still managed to still be in the playoff picture this long ahead in the season. Congrats to them. They didn't quit. They didn't roll over. They still have a chance, which is surprising. But I want to see what happens the rest of the way with the Cowboys. Horrible game from the Eagles. I think this says more about the Eagles than it does about the Cowboys, by my personal account, because I don't know what's going on with their offense. They were rolling in the first half, and then in the second half, this happens? It's not a good look for Jalen Hurts in that offense. But overall, good win from the Cowboys. It lets me know they can come back from leads when you need to. Dak Prescott isn't just a game manager. He's a game decider. I can't believe I have to say that, but down 21 points and you're still able to win that game. Pretty damn impressive. So all in all, not bad. Not bad for the Cowboys. Very bad for the Eagles. And this is a bad look going into the playoffs relatively quickly. Because if you get stalled out in the second half, you're going to lose some of those games.
Yeah, and you know, you get injuries on the offensive line and that ends up hurting. Like Saquon only had 10 carries in this game.
Yeah.
And they threw the ball 39 times, which now Jalen Hurts, 27 for 39 and a touchdown, but the run game not there. And we've seen now a few throughout the season when the O-line isn't fully healthy, that run game comes to a complete halt. But, you know, I also say this, I've said this a few times with the Eagles, you know, they have a tough schedule. They had an extremely tough schedule to start the season, and you don't expect to win every single one of those games, especially when you have a, like I said, bit of a tougher schedule in a divisional game where your divisional rival, it happens to be pretty fucking good, against you at when you go to their place. So I don't think it says as much about the Eagles as we think. in that regard. But I don't know. CJ, what do you think?
It does, because Saquon Barkley's been terrible. He's not even averaging 4 yards a carry this season. He's averaging a career low 3.7, and he only has 4 touchdowns so far this season. Horrific, actually.
Yeah, because half
and the don't line get me wrong, Philly's still got like a 98-99% shot to make the playoffs, but you know, they were at the one seed. They're now number two. They're going to be playing the Bears soon. That's going to have huge seeding implications. So as for the Cowboys, I don't think they're making the playoffs. I think they're only at like 10%. And I know why they're doing good now. At least I think so. They're rallying around the unfortunate tragedy of Marshawn Nealon's passing. You know, obviously prayers out for his family. That was horrible. But yeah, I mean, I think it's bringing them together, and you know, they obviously want to win for Marshawn, and rightfully so. But for me, the biggest issue isn't what happened on the field. Like, yeah, giving up 24 unanswered to lose isn't great. It's what happened in the post-game presser. They asked Jalen Hurts if he was surprised that the Eagles offense hasn't found consistency. And he said, no. So yeah, they said, oh, hey, Jalen, are you surprised that your offense hasn't found its consistency yet? And he just said, no. He's not surprised. That right there, that speaks volumes. I don't care what their record says. I do not care if they're 8-3. I don't care if they're leading the division. I don't care that they're a slam dunk to make the playoffs. This offseason, maybe sooner rather than later, Kevin Petullo has to be fired. He has to be fired. And I'm so concerned, at least for Eagles fans, and I'm sure our good friends at Squawking Eagles would agree, that the Eagles just be like, oh, but we're 8-3. We don't have to make any changes. Yes, you do. They're so, I won't say they're unserious. They're just unconvincing as a team. And until you get rid of Petullo, you're not going anywhere.
They're winning because of the defense. That's that's 100% sure. There's no denying that. My only issue with saying fire Kevin Petullo is, like, Jalen Hurts has had a different OC in each of his first 6 seasons in the league. Granted, it's brought him to 2 Super Bowls and getting a ring, but
well, it's not like they keep firing them. 2 of them just got poached.
That's 100%. You're 100% right about that. But that's not the most ideal scenario you want to give a quarterback.
No, and it also doesn't help that their head coach seems to be very coordinator reliant.
Yeah.
They're so lucky Fangio didn't get poached on this offseason. Otherwise, the defense would have collapsed. Like, remember, they lost both their coordinators after they lost to the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. And yeah, maybe it takes a second approach. I don't know.
Maybe the Eagles just need to do what some other teams have started to figure out, kind of like what the Commanders are doing. They get a guy like Cliff Kingsbury, who had a head coaching stint, is known to be a very good offensive coach, had a head coaching stint and said, I don't want to be a head coach anymore. Vic Fangio had a head coaching stint. He's like, I'm all set with head coaching. I think I'm good as a DC.
Yeah.
And here he is.
McDaniels and OC this offseason, aren't they?
Yeah, honestly, I could see that happening. McDaniels going to the Eagles at that point to be the new host. That'd be pretty interesting. All right. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll have the recap of the Panthers 49ers after this, along with week 12, top three, bottom three. This is the Full Marisky Podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6th or 7th spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome back to the Full Marisky Podcast. Monday Night Football. Jeez, 49ers win, but this was an ugly one. Ugly defense showed up. I'm more specifying Brock Purdy throwing 3 interceptions in this game. They get the win 20-9. Bryce Young didn't have a great game either. He threw 469 yards, 2 interceptions, 18 for 29. Run game wasn't there. The run game was there, but they couldn't possess the ball long enough to even do anything with it. But looking at San Francisco real quick, Christian McCaffrey looking like his old self, 89 yards, touchdown, 7 catches, 53 yards. George Kittle was getting involved a lot in this game as well. Juwan Jennings with a touchdown catch. But the real story here is Brock Purdy throwing 3 interceptions in the first half, and the Panthers did nothing with it. Like, you look at this game in the viewpoint of the Panthers, right? You just saw the Buccaneers get spanked on Sunday Night Football against the Rams, right? Mm-hmm. And now, with a win, you go atop the NFC South and you blow it. You blow it. Granted, it's the 49ers. Robert Saleh's defense is always going to be tough. No injuries does not matter. But Panthers defense forced Brock Purdy to make some bad plays tonight. The offense was given a lot of opportunities. They should have came away with, I believe, at least 9 points from those 3 interceptions, and they only came away with 3. And the final score, of course, being 20-9. Just too many missed opportunities for the Panthers. And once again, it's one of those teams where, like, they lose you, and then all of a sudden you get reeled back in. You think they're all in, and then they have a game like this. CJ had the take of, this is just the NFC version of the Jacksonville Jaguars, just with a worse record. That's pretty much the only difference. That's really the only difference. CJ, we'll start with you since I just quoted you, but your thoughts.
There must be set off camera, a weird swap between Monday night and Thursday night in spirit, because good God, Carolina. Actually, Chris, I'm going to quote you. This is something you said off camera. Every time you're out on them, they reel you back in. And then when you're like, okay, maybe there's something there, they say, ha, 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 you fool, and proceed to stab you in the back. This is what it was. And, I refer to them earlier this episode as the Jaguars of the NFC. And not just because they're a cat team from the South. It's because they're horrifically inconsistent. They are chaos incarnate. You have no idea what you're going to get from them. And as for the Niners, I'm just going to be frank. You got lucky. It seems like most other teams that are above 500 would have made you pay after getting not one, not two, but 3 interceptions. You got a Brock Purdy putting on his best Nathan Peterman performance. And honestly, the fact that they came away with 3 points after getting like a field goal off of 3 interceptions, that's horrible. The Panthers had the ability to win this game. They were set up in some solid field position multiple times, and they just couldn't capitalize on it. The defense was solid. I mean, it was fine, especially towards the end, the Niners are able to put it away. But especially in the beginning, I thought the defense was solid. I don't know. They really didn't have an answer for Christian McCaffrey. And even when Carolina had to air the ball out when playing from behind, Bryce Young also had a turnover of his own. Maybe I think he had 2, actually.
Sure. He did.
So, San Fran's giving the ball. Carolina's giving him the ball right back. So it really doesn't matter. I think Carolina's – I don't care if they're 6-6. They're not a contender. And as for the Niners, you think I'm going to be nice? Oh, no. You're fake. There's a reason you're a wild card team. Maybe that's just because of the injuries. It could very well be. We can all admit that. But I can't get behind this. They are reeking of fraudulence, and I expect them fully to be a first-round exit. And before I hand the spotlight back to you guys, I'd like to point out there's a playoff update. Niners are still the 7th seed. but their playoff odds have jumped to 86%. And with this, Carolina, even though they're 6-6, their odds are down to 14.
Yeah, that makes sense, considering that the only way that you could probably see the Panthers making the playoffs at this point is winning the division. I'll give you another reason why the 49ers playoff Tampa, though. Huh?
I said Tampa just got saved.
Yeah.
Oh, Tampa should be thanking their lucky stars right now, I'll tell you what.
100%. And I'll give you another reason why the 49ers' chances are so high. It's because their conference record is 8-2. 8-2. That's going to be pretty good for a tiebreaker over anybody. And for reference, the Lions, who are the last team out right now, 4-3 in the conference, just for reference. Tuck.
This game was abysmal from start to end. I was thinking this was going to be a little bit of a shootout because first series, the 49ers go marching down the field with McCaffrey touching the ball 8 times and then finishing with the Rashad Jennings touchdown. I'm like, okay, here we go. Here goes the 49ers. Bryce Young proceeds to do nothing on the offensive side of the ball. Okay, not so bad. Then they kick it. Then the 49ers get the ball back. Interception. And then from then on, I saw some of the worst quarterback play I think I've ever seen in quite some time. And I've seen Nathan Peterman throw 5 interceptions in one game. This was almost as bad as that. Oh my God. First off, the 49ers did not deserve to win this game. They survived this game because that Carolina Panthers defense, which is very underrated, by the way, considering all the injuries they're dealing with, had 3 interceptions, had 4, almost had a 4th one, but went through the safety's hands, and quite frankly, almost got a forced fumble recovery, but thankfully the 49ers got back on the ball. They've had ample opportunities to help this offense, and this offense got only 3 points off turnovers. Hell, one was even in the red zone, and they couldn't turn that into points. I don't know what's going on with the Carolina Panthers. This was supposed to be their big opportunity to show in primetime that they can hang with some of the contenders in the NFC. They didn't show that. They showed they don't deserve to be in the playoffs. They don't deserve to. This was a playoff game for them, and they just pissed the bed. Because now the Bucs are now back atop of the NFC South, and I don't see them losing it to this Panthers team. Oh, my God. Bryce Young, he's not there yet. McMillan, those 2 drops were horrible. The 3rd-and-2 drop where he had black gloves on and then immediately switched over to white because they were more his feel. Whatever. He redeemed himself with that 29-yard touchdown, but again.
I agree with you, Tuck. They said it. I was like, what? I get it. I do. But at the time I was like, are we being for real right now? But I mean,
outside from a little mini plays from Rico Dowdle and Chuba Hubbard, this offense was wasn't even mid. It was just bad. It's just abysmal. The 49ers offense was better, but again, the turnovers were killer. Outside of that, they deserve to win this game, but at the same time, Brock Purdy's game today was horrid. Against any other team in the NFC, they would not have won this game. But against the Panthers, they survived. Congratulations to them. They got the W, which is hard to do in this league, but wasn't deserved, wasn't earned, and the Panthers just gave it to them. That's how I feel about this game.
It's wild, too, considering the fact that they just put up 41 points last week against Arizona and Brock Purdy's first game back as well. And game 2, I will say second half was a little bit better for Brock, all things considered, since he didn't throw any more interceptions. But also more credit to the Panthers defense because J.C. Horn, he had 2 interceptions tonight, ended up missing the second half because he was thrown up after the second pick. I don't remember if they said he had a headache or something, but
concussion. They said it was a concussion.
Okay. I was about to say the minute they were like, yeah, he was throwing up after the second pick, I was like, that's a concussion. But I didn't want to speak out of my ass, you know.
They said it was a concussion on air, but
yeah, I saw too.
He did his job. He gave you 2 picks. He spotted y'all 2 picks and you did nothing with it.
Yeah, he did his job. The offense just didn't do it.
Yeah. He has he's the only player on the team that has more, that has multiple picks this year, and he has five now.
Now that he's staying healthy, he's become like a top 10 corner in the league.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were showing this stat on TV. When Brock Purdy throws the ball like 15 plus yards down the field, the touchdown to interception ratio was one touchdown, six interceptions.
Yeah.
How do you expect to win with that? And I'm not saying Brock Purdy's a bad quarterback.
Is that this year?
Yes. He's having a very bad stretch of games right now.
Jeez. I mean, he's been.
This game was supposed to be so good because I saw what Brock Purdy did against the Cardinals, and then I saw what Bryce Young did against the Falcons. Very respectable defenses. I'm like, okay, let's see what's going to happen on prime time. And then this happened. Wasn't expecting it. Mid, just awful quarterback play. Just bad all around from the Carolina Panthers. Christian McCaffrey did show up, though. I'm happy about that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was good to see him get going again. All right. Let's move on to week 12, top three, bottom three. CJ, can you please calculate the pick'em results, please, if you haven't already? Week 3, top three, bottom three. Week 12, top three, bottom three. Fucking hey, man. That's back-to-back weeks. I fucked it up. Top three. We'll start with the Chiefs.
Thank you so much, Chris.
All right, buddy.
I'm messing around.
Yeah. We're going to start with the Chiefs. Comeback win against the Colts. Backs against the wall. Count the Chiefs out. What do? They come away with a big win. And a comeback win against a Colts team that, well, they've been disgusting all year long. And for all we know, maybe they've cracked the code in figuring out how to beat the Colts. And we were talking about this earlier. Maybe all it is just holding Jonathan Taylor to under 80 yards. Maybe that's just the key. The Texans, boy, pulling out a win. A big win on Thursday night against Josh Allen and the Bills, forcing Josh Allen to throw two picks, no touchdowns allowed. And I mean, another team where backs against the wall, playoff hopes are kind of riding on this game, and you show up and get the job done at home. Cowboys, obviously there's a theme to this top three, and it's teams that are on the cusp of this is potentially going to be the game to decide what you end up doing with the season. We're at that point. We're right before Thanksgiving, and the Cowboys down 21-0 at home against the top team in the conference. And what do? They come back and score 24 unanswered in the final three quarters and beat the Eagles.
Fun fact, the Eagles apparently still don't want to fire Kevin Petullo. I'm sure our good friends at Squawking Eagles are not thrilled.
Yeah, we should ask him about that.
I'm not brave enough.
I've done it before. I'll do it again. Tuck, you want to touch on anything? No, not
even the bottom three.
All right. Bottom three, we'll start with the Vikings. Back-to-back weeks making it to the bottom three, unfortunately. And it's really because
it's the nine effect.
It's the nine effect. It's really because of J.J. McCarthy. We were talking about this earlier, too. There's this new Twitter account called QBGami. So anyone that knows what a scoregami is, basically translate that to a quarterback and their overall statistics. So in this case, this was J.J. McCarthy's stat line was 87 yards, no touchdowns, two interceptions. They don't take into account completion percentage. And this is the first time since David Carr in 2002 that a quarterback has put up this stat line. On top of that, now J.J. McCarthy is now on concussion protocol.
Yep. Also, I got a stat as well. Oops, sorry.
Soft benching.
Yeah, pretty much. Also, I wanted to mention there's a stat that I saw. I believe since 2000, there are 852 quarterbacks that qualify for this stat, you know, EPA per play, right? J.J. McCarthy is 851 out of 852. EPA per play, every quarterback qualifying since 2000. The only quarterback that's worse, Jamarcus Russell.
Oh, that's
Jamarcus Russell.
That's insane that you say that, because I saw a part of my take did a blind resume, and it was the two quarterbacks. Player A was like 6 touchdowns, 10 interceptions, 57 QBR. Quarterback B was 5 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, 76.1 QBR. I forget what the completion percentage was, if there was. But those were like the
McCarthy's complete percentage, by the way, is 54.1.
McCarthy?
Yeah.
Anyways, player A was J.J. McCarthy. Player B was Jamarcus Russell.
Yeah. So McCarthy, like you said, to go over for everyone listening at home to make sure we're all on the same page here. McCarthy had, across 6 games, is 929 yards, 54.1% completion percentage, 6 touchdowns, 10 picks, and I Googled it just to make sure. McCarthy, as far as EPA per dropback, still 851 out of 852. Only QB worse is Jamarcus Russell. Yeah. So it's literally not hyperbole to say he is in Jamarcus Russell territory.
So, yeah, and that was Jamarcus the stat for Jamarcus Russell that I gave was in his first 6 games as well. I just wanted to make that one clear. Tuck, do you want to say anything about that?
Jabba the Hutt, Jamarcus Russell. If you're in that level of quarterback play, I am concerned. I am worried. I need you to get better. For everyone's sake, you need to play better than Jamarcus Russell.
And Jamarcus Russell didn't even read the fucking like playbook or didn't even watch film.
Yes. That please get better, J.J. McCarthy. I know there's something in there. But please, please play better. Dear God, you're making Justin Jefferson look like an average wide receiver. That's not normal.
Yeah, man. Like, we all thought, you know, the joke was, and I've said this before, that we all thought that Jefferson was kind of like DeAndre Hopkins in the sense he was like quarterback proof. He was going to ball out no matter who was throwing him the ball. Congratulations, J.J. McCarthy. You have unquarterback proof Justin Jefferson. Not entirely sure you managed to do that, but you did.
I used to be able to say, fuck it, just throw it up there. Justin Jefferson's going to get it. I can't say that anymore because last time I seen him do it, it got intercepted twice. It doesn't work anymore. He's broken him.
Yeah. Last team on the or we haven't even gotten to the second team yet. Jesus. Second team on the bottom three, the Bucks. They've hit rock bottom at this point in terms of what's going on with their team. They lose 34-7. In a game that was over by the first half. Credit to their defense, they only gave up 3 points the rest of the way. But now you got Baker Mayfield hurt and on a team that has just been riddled with injuries all year. I mean, Baker Mayfield or not, in the second half, they were not winning that. They were not going to come back and win that game on the road in LA. That's just a matter of fact. And injuries have finally like really caught up to them at this point. The Raiders, the last team on the bottom three, losing 24-10 to the Shedeur Sanders Browns.
Hey, perfect timing.
Perfect timing. Against all odds. Against all odds, guys. Against all odds.
I believed in him.
No, honestly, I thought he could be fine. And you guys know I had him above Dylan Gabriel, at least. And you know how bad it was for the Raiders? Shedeur Sanders has become the first Browns quarterback since they were reintroduced in the NFL in 99 to win their first career start. Congratulations, Raiders. You quite literally out-Brownsed the Browns.
Yeah.
The Raiders had 13 penalties. They had more first downs than the Browns. They were 4-for-17 on third down, which doesn't really matter in this case, to be honest. But
it's not great, though.
Not great at all. They also had 13 more minutes of time of possession than the Browns.
And they lost.
To top it all off, Geno Smith also seen flipping off Raiders fans after the game.
And he was sacked 10 times.
I'd be pissed, too, if I got sacked 10 times and everyone's blaming me. Also, Myles Garrett should win DPOY, but he's probably not. And that's the travesty of this season.
And that's coming from a Ravens fan.
Yes. This man has 18 sacks on the season, and it's not even, what, we're only 12 games through. And he's not
way through the season, yes.
He's on pace to destroy this season-high sack record, but he's not. They're not going to give him credit for that, and he won't win DPOY.
Who's going to win it?
Not him.
How do you know?
He's not going to make the playoffs.
That doesn't mean anything.
It'd be the first time in a while that somebody won it without making the playoffs.
Myles Garrett is currently leading everybody in Defensive Player of the Year odds.
Yeah, I was going to say.
According to DraftKings has him at -1,000. He's winning Defensive Player of the Year.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he's just clearly head and shoulders above everyone else. So I think it's like obvious he should win it. But for some reason, I thought they would like take like winning into account.
No, they only do that.
Maybe MVP the only stat where winning means, or the only awards where winning means anything, or Coach of the Year and MVP.
Yeah. Like Offensive Player of the Year, Jonathan Taylor currently leads in that category. She like that. Yeah.
Yeah. The only other player that I don't think he will win, obviously. I don't think it'd be close, but Kyle Hamilton. That's about it. But I don't see anyone else close to Myles Garrett.
Or say Kyle Hamilton to win Defensive Player of the Year?
No, I'm not saying he should win it. I'm saying the only person that should be in the conversation.
I'd argue Benito from Denver as like a distant second.
Will Anderson. It's either Benito.
Will Anderson, of course. Yeah, I forgot.
All right, here's where it's at right now. Myles Garrett's first, Micah, Will Anderson, Nick Benito, Brian Burns, Aiden Hutchinson, in that order. Like, I would also consider all those guys before I even consider giving Kyle Hamilton a thought.
I wouldn't.
Defensive Player of the Year, Tuck, is a very pass rusher-centric award. I know Surtain won it last year, but correct me if I'm wrong, the last DB to win before Surtain, I think, was Stephon Gilmore back in 2019.
Yes.
So you got 2020, 21, 22, and 23. So that's like 4 years between another defensive back wing this entire presidential term.
I don't think people understand like how good Kyle Hamilton is.
No, he is, Tuck. Like, I understand.
He's revolutionizing what we're doing. I'm not saying he should win it because Myles Garrett is such a beast, but it's not like he should be top five, and I don't think he gets the credit he deserves because he's a safety.
And he's on a Zach Ord defense, so do it that yes, way you will.
If you were to tell me Kyle Hamilton had like 10 interceptions this year, you would have sold me, but like I'm not trying to discredit what Kyle Hamilton does for your team. That's just how it is.
No, even at 10 interceptions, it's not like Deron Bland or Trayvon Diggs were going to win DPOY.
Well, no, because they also gave up an ungodly amount of touchdowns.
Yeah.
Especially Diggs.
And has Kyle Hamilton played all 11 games this year?
Probably,
for you guys?
Yes.
I believe so.
Okay, for some reason I was trying to remember if he was one of the many that was injured on your team or not.
No, he wasn't. He was the only solid piece on my defense for all throughout the season.
Yeah. But, like, another reason why I bring up the interceptions part is that a lot of times, like, you have your Deron Bland or Trevion Diggs situation, but, like, a lot of times you do end up, like, if you get a lot of picks, like Champ Bailey, Stephon Gilmore, you're going to win DPO. Like, Champ Bailey did not win Defensive Player of the Year in, like, the best year he ever had, and it was because Jason Taylor won. Like, that's, like, to really, push the point home on that.
I think he should get a lot more credit than he's getting. I'm not saying he should win it, because I think Myles Garrett is a beast specifically this season. I just think he should be getting a lot more credit than he's getting.
We can agree on that. originally you were talking him up like he is the MVP. That was my
No.
He's or not. The defense player of the year, I should say.
No, he's not that. It's Miles by a long shot.
Yeah, Myles Garrett being -1,000 to win defense player of the year at this point of the season is.
And he's just suffering.
That's disgusting. I want to see what he's on pace for right now. You were saying to break the record. By the way, Brian Burns, 13 sacks this season, and he's top five in odds. In terms of projected sacks this year, 27 sacks, 27.8. Yeah. So it's really like 28 sacks.
Mm-hmm.
That's wild. Which
would destroy the record. And I don't know who's going to stop him.
No one.
Literally no one. No one can.
Yeah.
Unless the Browns said, this season sucks, we're sitting you for next season. And I wish they would.
That would be pretty heinous.
I need him to finally get this record because it's been around for far too long.
You want to know something crazier too?
What?
The first, like, up until this Steelers game on October 12th, Myles Garrett only had 4 sacks. So basically what I'm telling you is that in the last 5 games, he has 14 sacks.
Yes.
OD. Wow. All right. I think that's a good spot to wrap up the show on. Another thing about the Raiders, Chip Kelly got fired.
We saw that.
And the Giants fired Shambone as well.
Yep.
Fun fact, Chip Kelly, when he was hired this offseason, was made the highest paid coordinator in the league, getting $6 million a year. Yep. Never change, Raiders.
Just to add on to the Raiders being on bottom three. I love it.
Yeah.
All right. That'll do it for us tonight or today. Thank you for tuning in to another Tuesday episode of the Fumble Rooski podcast. New episode coming out on Friday at 8 a.m. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. And we also have all our episodes available on Spotify, Spreaker, Apple Podcast, iHeartRadio, Google Podcast, and so much more. Be sure to follow our Instagram, FumbleRooski_podcast, to keep up with the pod and the latest coverage on the NFL. Otherwise, CJ Medeiros, Justin Tucker, I'm Chris Kostich. We'll see you on Friday. Actually, that's a lie. That's all a lie. That is all a lie. Good thing I caught myself. Next episode is Wednesday. We will now have a Friday episode. Wednesday at 8 a.m. Thanksgiving special with game picks for Thursday, Black Friday, and the rest of week 13, Sunday and Monday night football. Tuesday, we'll go back to regularly scheduled program, but be sure to tune in on Wednesday for our Thanksgiving special show and game picks. All right. We'll see you on Wednesday. Over and out.